Welcome to the Self-Publishing School Podcast. This is the podcast to listen to if you're an aspiring writer or an author who wants to be more successful. On this show, you'll learn how to write and launch a book successfully, all from the top authors and people just like you who are doing it at the highest level. I'm your host, Chandler Volt, the founder of Self-Publishing School, the author of the book called Published, and the CEO of selfpublishing.com. For free training on how to publish a book that sells 10,000 copies, go to selfpublishing.com/free training.
As a writer, I really enjoyed having kind of a programming team because it's like most of the time I'm doing something as an author and I'm thinking to myself, oh man, wouldn't it be nice if? And then I'm like, you know what? That's a great idea. Let's go do that. You don't want to, after all of that, have somebody buy your book and they open up and it's blasé. It doesn't look great. There are some really amazing things that you can do that will give your reader a wow factor and it will tell them that, oh, wow, this really is a legitimate book.
Hey, Chandler Bolt here, and joining me today is my good friend, Mr. Dave Chesson. Dave and I have been friends and in the same industry, gosh, for a really, really long time now, way back to, I will forever owe Dave and be appreciative to Dave. You've reached out, gosh, probably 7 years ago and said, hey, your website and SEO sucks. I could teach you how to do way better than that. And we got on a call and it just like opened up my eyes to this whole world. If you don't know Dave, you're probably living under a rock or maybe just you haven't been in the book publishing industry. He's the creator of Kindlepreneur. He's also the creator of Publisher Rocket. Maybe you've heard of that tool. And Atticus. Those are his author-specific tools. The guy runs a bunch of software development and about 17 bajillion companies. Every time we talk, I can't keep up. I'm like, wait, what? You got that company too? He's just a really smart guy, great person. Now, you may remember he was on the episode back on episode 70. We talked about all things Publisher Rocket. So if you're in the marketing phase of your book journey, check out Publisher Rocket. Pretty much all of our authors use it. We have a good episode there, episode 70, about keywords, categories. How do you optimize your listing? How do you use really the fundamentals and principles of SEO with your book, right? And so we're not going to talk about any of that stuff today. We're going to talk about Atticus and formatting and writing better books. And so world's longest intro, Dave, welcome. Great to have you here.
Well, thanks for having me back.
Yeah. So let's talk Atticus. For those that don't know, what is it and why did you decide to create this new tool? Obviously, you've had a lot of success with Publisher Rocket, but why did you decide to create Atticus and what is it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, as a writer, I really enjoyed having kind of a programming team because it's like most of the time I'm doing something as an author and I'm thinking to myself, oh man, wouldn't it be nice if? And then I'm like, you know what? That's a great idea. Let's go do that. And what really stemmed my thought process on building Atticus was because before Atticus, what I was using was I was using Scrivener to write out my book. And I'd done that since they first came out. And then I would export to Word and then I'd email back and forth with my editor to get, you know, the changes. Cause even though I begged my editor to move over to Google Docs, they, you know, so maybe Google Docs, maybe not. I would use that to collaborate. And then I would go put it into some formatting software like Judo or so as to then turn it into a book. Now this is problematic because if you ask yourself, what is a good book writing software? The right answer is one where you can write, collaborate, and format into a book, you know? And so for us authors, we were having to buy lots of different software. We were trying to learn how to use all the different software. And I just started with the question of, wouldn't it be nice if there was one place where I could hold my book, that I could collaborate with an editor, and then I could format and turn it into something beautiful. And the other thing, there were two real big pain points that I wanted to address. The first one, and I'm sure there's listeners out there that have run into this. There was a time where I was working with my editor and we were sending the file back and forth. And the funny thing is I never deleted the old file. So when it came time to go pay a designer to format my book, I then sent them the wrong one. Oh, so they formatted a version that didn't have like the last chapter edited or was actually there was one time where I was missing a chapter and the reviews destroyed me over that. It's one of those things. It happens. version control is a problem because let's face it, we've all probably listed it. This is the final, all caps, final edited. Yeah. Use this one, right? And we never delete them. So there was that was one pain point that I also had as a writer. The second pain point that I had too is that, like, for example, my first book I wrote, I paid somebody who formatted it and they sent it back to me. I know that I have things that I should change and edit. The problem is that if I go and, oops, I made a mistake, let me change this word. Ooh, I got this review that said that I misspelled something, got it, you know, I'll go in there. I then have to send that file back to the formatter to format. I got to pay all that money again. I was like, man, that would suck. So my goal was, if you created one writing software that allowed you to write, collaborate, and format, then if I have no version control problems anymore, there's no chance that I send the wrong file in. It's all right there. And then on top of that too, if say 1 year later, I want to change up the back matter, I want to add something, or I want to change my biography, switch out a picture. It takes me 2 seconds. I just pull up the file, I make the change, and then I hit export, I upload it to Amazon, and I'm good to go. And there's no more of this back and forth with someone. So with all of that in mind, we built out Atticus so as to be able to create that opportunity. Now, when we started, we built out formatting first. You know, the old adage, right? How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. So we're like, great, let's focus on formatting. And then we built that out, and now we've built out the writing component. And there's even more features that we're going to add over time to make writing just a more enjoyable thing. And this summer, we will have a collaboration where you can then bring somebody in to co-write with you. You can bring in an editor who can then do track changes and you can accept them right there inside of your Atticus. And you can even have commenters, you know, people read what you're doing and leave comments. And you can control that and never have to leave the program.
That's great. That's great. And that's, I think that's a really good overview. And now we can dive into kind of some of the specifics and core elements. And I'll say this as we dive into more of the specifics. People in our world, selfpublishing.com, ask about Atticus all the time. A bunch of our authors use it. All of our internal formatters, we format books all the time. We use Atticus. So I think this probably goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway. Like, we highly recommend it. It's a really awesome tool. It works very, very well. And I'm glad you mentioned the version control collaboration part, because I think anyone who's ever written a book, I was laughing when you're like, final. Okay, final. Okay, final for real this time. Final number 7, right? And so version control, if you're not familiar with it, it's okay when you're going and you're sending it to an editor and you're getting it back. Well, if you ever worked in Microsoft Word, which I did with my first book, I realized real quickly that was not a great idea, because if I send it to them and then hold up, I want to add something to it. I can't really do it. I have to wait until they send it back to me, because, you know, I can, but I got to be real meticulous about anything I add, making sure that when they send me that new version that it gets added in, et cetera. So obviously, I mean, that was the big revolution for me moving to Google Docs. And that was like kind of like the, okay, now I can chase my editor through the book, which I love. They don't love as much. But you know, we can work in real time. And it's like, all right, you've edited the first 3 chapters. Cool. Now I'm going to come right behind you and we can work through that so that there's not these big, long delays of I'm writing for however long, you're editing for however long, and now you're sending it back. And maybe concurrent events. Like they can't happen at the same time. I don't know if I'm using that word properly, but they can't happen at the same time. So I guess let's unpack the book writing side of things. How does that work with Atticus, and why is it better than Google Docs, or why is it better than other writing tools like Scrivener or other writing tools that people might use?
Yeah, well, I'll be open and honest and say at this moment, I think Scrivener is probably a better writing tool than Atticus. And that's to be open and fair, because they do have a lot of features. They have a lot more things, but I think in the next year or so, and when we come out with new features and additions, that's no extra cost. We're always coming out with. There are a lot more things that I want to do, including outlining, as well as there's a couple of things. But I will say this, though. One of the things that really triggered me to try to improve on kind of the Scrivener and the writing aspect is that I've always kind of chuckled about the fact that you pay $50 for the writing software, which, by the way, every time they come out with a new version or so, you got to upgrade and pay for that again. But then most people are paying like $200 to take a course on how to use it. You know, and there are a lot of courses out there that help to try to show you I think it's not very intuitive and it's very hard. Now, as somebody who's used it for, 15 years or so, you start to learn, but there's a lot of features that I never use because I just don't know they exist. I don't know how they work. And they're a little detailed. So coming to the writing aspect on that, I will say still at this moment, Scrivener is a better writing software, but you're not going to be able to collaborate with it. And while it can format, it is there's another $50 course, I think, on formatting just in Scrivener that I found online, but you're going to be incredibly limited in what you can do. You're not going to be able to see your book in real time, what it's going to look like and verify. You just kind of do a whole bunch of things. You kind of hope that this will look good. You click export and you have to open up and see, did this work? And if not, you got to go back and forth. So that's kind of with Scrivener. With regards to Google Docs, that was one of the things I really switched over to, especially because of version control. The moment you spend a couple $100 in getting somebody to format your book for you, and you realize they formatted the wrong version, like, let me tell you, like, that becomes like primary, public enemy number one for me, is the,
like, I'll never that's a mistake that. You only make once.
Yeah. Cause then after I got the right file to them, luckily that formatter was kind of nice. And I think I was paying like $250 for the whole book, but they charged me like $100 just to sort of do the same book again, but this time with the right chapter. And you would think that, well, maybe they could just add it. It doesn't really work that way. It's all about the orphans and the widows and things like that, making sure that your page shows up right. So anyways, I switched over to Google Docs and I thought it was great. The problem I had with Google Docs is a couple things. Number one is that the writing for a large book is not the most conducive in Google Docs. Google Docs was not made for books. It was made for, shall we say, collaborative writing of all sorts. I would also say too that it starts to slow down when you have hundreds of pages.
Yeah.
And that can be problematic. The other thing too is there's a little bit of, there's ways to maintain privacy. But one of the other things is that if you've given access to somebody, let's say you have beta readers or so, they can still download a copy. And so you can have versions of your book out there in that respect. And so it is a great opportunity. I do like the collaborative features. I still use it between my team when I write up a document, or something for the team. But again, like I said, it's just not built for writers with writers in mind. And then finally, when we get to formatting, there's a lot of formatting options out there. Vellum is one of the most popular ones. And really, they were an inspiration, and by inspiration, what I mean is they took this concept of, wouldn't it be nice if authors could see what a book looks like in physical print, ebook, on your phone, and that sort of thing. But the problem for them was they only worked on Mac. They didn't work on all computers. Also, too, there were a lot of features that they weren't, coming out with. And so we really kind of jumped on those. And that's why, coming back to those three that we just talked about, I would say we have, with regards to Scrivener, we're not as good, but getting there in writing, and it's going to be a lot more or easier to use and more intuitive already. With Google Docs, when we have collaboration come out, and again, that comes out this summer of this recording, so in 2024 summer, in case somebody in the future is listening to this.
It's already there, baby.
That's right. No, but it's when that comes out, I think it's going to be amazing for authors, because you're going to have way
more. I'm excited about that feature specifically. I mean, that's just, it's a game changer.
Once an editor is done working on your book, you can remove their access just like that. You can see who has access to your books. And so you can then have almost like project management of who gets to do what. Or if you want to work alongside with another writer and you want to use it, that will be incredible. Yeah. And so there's that. And then, like I said, we've just been adding more features for formatting. And I've got, there's so many that are coming out in like the next couple of weeks that I'm just incredibly jazzed about, but we're keeping a little bit tight-lipped, but it's going to be excellent.
Cool. Well, I'll backtrack and recap just a little bit. And so on the writing side of things, you kind of talked about, hey, Scrivener is great, but it's super advanced. So the metaphor that came to mind is like kind of like putting somebody in the cockpit of a plane and they've never flown before, or putting somebody in a race car and they've never driven a car. It can do a lot of things, but it's kind of confusing and cumbersome. And then on the simple side, you've got Google Docs, but again, it's not made specifically for writing books, and it slows down as you get bigger and all that stuff. So I know that you guys started solving the problem of formatting and have kind of been working backwards. And that's something that I just love watching. Your approach to product development, your approach to software development is just always iterating, always getting better and developing features that people actually need and want. I think it's a superpower of yours. And so I know that all the writing stuff is, and the collaboration, I know it's going to get there. If you say it's going to get there, it's going to get there. Where it's not the the Elon approach where, hey, we're going to get a car and it's going to be shipping next year and it ships like 5 years from now, which is cool. I mean, I love Elon. He's doing a lot of amazing things, but I know that you're going to follow through on that. So I guess let's zoom into formatting. You already kind of talked about some of the features there. I'll share a quick story and then I'll tee up a question for you. So I remember when I published my first book. And so we're all geared up for launch and it's me and my co-author and we are, it's a Friday or something and we're supposed to launch the book on that Monday or Tuesday. And we pull up our KDP account, so Kindle Direct Publishing account, and go to upload the book. We've got our Word doc ready, or maybe it's a Google doc. And we're like, all right, here we go. And then it's like an error message. I'm like, what? Like, what do you mean? And it's like, this doesn't accept, you know, Google Docs or Word Docs or whatever it was. You need a .epub or .mobi file. So I'm Googling, what's a .epub and .mobi file? And realizing that I have to get my book formatted. This is something that I didn't even think of. So maybe let's start there. So I know it's very simple and in our world, everybody knows it, but what is book formatting and why is it important?
Yeah, that's great. So really when it comes to book formatting, there's really two types of formatting, right? There's the physical print book formatting and there's ebook formatting. The physical print book formatting recommends that it be in a PDF file, but it has to meet certain requirements. And the reason for that is because of the printing presses. So if you're printing through Amazon, okay, and they're print on demand, which means that when somebody goes to Amazon, they buy the book, Amazon will then literally send the data to the PDF, if you will, to a printing press near the shopper, make that one book and then ship it. Well, in order for their printing press to be able to do that effectively and efficiently, it has to be made a certain way. Margins have to be a certain thing. Aspects have to be where they're supposed to be. Everything needs to be pre-calculated. There are a lot of steps to make that Word document have all the things it needs and then turn it into the appropriate PDF form for Amazon to be like, yep, got it, no problem. And that also means that it's a much better printed product. So, you know, you don't have weird things going on. With regards to ebooks, though, that what happens is, if you think about it, when somebody is on a Kindle, or if they're on their iPhone, or if they're on a Nook, or they're on an iPad, the screen sizes are different. And so you can't really, or you shouldn't have a prefixed image or a prefixed set of, you know, words that will always look the same way on every device. It will change. And so what they did was they wanted a reflowable format, something where the words are dynamic, the images change, everything sort of shifts the moment it gets on said e-reader device. And so back in the day, Amazon had their own file format called Mobi, and they were the only ones in the industry, and they recommended Mobi. They did take EPUB, but they really, you know, try to tell you don't do it, do Mobi. But the rest of the entire industry is like EPUB. Like, and by the way, what are you doing, Amazon? EPUB's a way better file format. Finally, like it was maybe a year and a half ago or so, finally Amazon waved the white flag and gave up on Mobi, and they pretty much sunset. And now they 100% recommend EPUB. If they haven't already, there's going to come a point where they just won't accept the Mobi file. There's a little bit of internal things. We've actually worked with their programming team, especially on the Kindle side, to ensure that all of our files make them super happy. But it was funny hearing the programmers talk in a very angry way about the whole Mobi EPUB shift, which was fun. So to kind of come back to that, we have the print and we have the EPUB. You have to have your margins and everything set, your calculation set, and you need to make sure that it looks good to you. Then you have the EPUB file that's totally good with all of your devices and will work so that in case you have a reader that wants to read on their Nook, they're not complaining because like, why did you do this to me? And so when you format it, you're making sure that your book and your ebook fit the rules and the requirements of all the markets so that they can do well with it. But then the last step to this is that you make sure that you're turning your work of art, the thing that you've spent hundreds of hours on, okay, making it what it is. You're going to format it so that it looks professional and good. You don't want to, after all of that, have somebody buy your book and they open up and it's blasé. It doesn't look great. There are some really amazing things that you can do that will give your reader reader a wow factor, and it will tell them that, oh, wow, this really is a legitimate, you know, book, and it just gives more value across the board.
That's good.
I hope you're loving this episode so far. So if you're serious about writing and publishing your book, we would love to chat with you and help create a custom plan. All right. So all you need to do right now is go to selfpublishing.com/schedule, schedule a 45-minute consultation with one of the experts on my team. All right, let's implement what you're learning in this episode and let's see how we can help with your book. Go to selfpublishing.com/schedule.
And so, and just one small example for folks who, you know, maybe haven't thought about the difference between formatting a print book and an ebook. I remember this was one of those things early on too. This is like a hand to palm moment. I'm like, what do you mean they can't have page numbers? It's like, oh, well, to your point, say I want to read it at 16 point font or 12 point or whatever. I mean, there is no page numbers except for the page number customized to the actual device that they're reading on. So there's a bunch of little things like that that are the difference. Now, I want to ask kind of maybe a two-part question. One is, how's the formatting different based on genre? So book formatting for fiction, how is that different from nonfiction? And then you mentioned there's a handful of things that you can do in the formatting to make your book pop. What are those things?
Absolutely. So one of the things I'm most proud of on our development with Atticus is that we've done a lot of work to make it, I think, the best nonfiction formatting for sure. And that's not to say it's not good at fiction. It's really good. But I mean, we made sure to do things that a lot of the book formatting software won't. Case in point, with Atticus, you can do footnotes and endnotes. A lot of companies do not do footnote. And by the way, footnotes only work in print. They don't work in ebook. So it just automatically turns into endnotes there. Just a heads up in case anybody's like, where's my footnotes? Reflowable won't do it. But we have footnotes.
They answered about endnotes. 500 support tickets probably that you guys have got. Yeah.
Right. No, actually, it's been good. Usually, a lot of the, especially nonfiction writers that are doing footnotes kind of know that to an extent, but we still give the ability for them to format the way that it look. But for those just thinking about getting into it, there's one little nugget right there that will help you. Also, too, we've designed callout boxes. So you see in really good nonfiction books, you know, if you're, you know, reading like some of the big authors, they'll have this beautifully designed box that has like quotes or a reminder or something of that magnitude. And so you can select, create certain call-out boxes to make your book stick out, your message, that PowerPoint that you, or that powerful statement that you want to put up there, have it show up just like that. And there's a lot of other edits that are given, including H1 through H6. A lot of formatting software does not have that. You can only have a, you know, a header of a certain size, and that's it. Whereas we can allow, and that I think is super important for nonfiction writers, to be able to have subsections and subsections and things like that, so as to really compartmentalize your information. Very, very soon, we're going to be adding just about every Google font that is out there. Matter of fact, like in the next week or two from what we're recording right here, all of Google fonts will be a part of this. So now you can really design those headers, you know, 1 through 6 to look exactly the way you want it, with your own style. And so these are, I think, things that a lot of formatting softwares don't do, and they should. So I'm very happy that we have that for nonfiction. But these are some of the things that really will make your book stand apart that only the big publishers have done in the past, or the ones that are paying some, Adobe InDesign creator to make look that way. And now you can do it with, you know, clicking a button, adding some things with ease.
That's great.
Another wonderful thing, too, and this kind of falls into both nonfiction and fiction, is that just putting images into a book is a lot harder than it sounds. And it's especially hard with ebook. Okay. So if you do it in print book, you know, you just want to make sure that it looks good in the print, the right size. If you're using color, you know, that the colors are correct. If it's not, then what is it going to look like when you have to change it to black and white? These are all very important. But when it comes to ebook, this is a little harder because remember, it's reflowable. Okay. So the words will reflow. And if you don't set this correctly, the image might show up in the wrong spot, or the image will shrink down to something super small on somebody's, we'll say cell phone when they're looking at it, and the image is lost, and then it looks unprofessional. So making sure that the code is added to the image to make it look good on all devices is incredibly important. And that's something that formatting softwares do behind the curtain, so that your when you look at what the book will look like inside of, say, Atticus, you will see, okay, that's how the image is going to look like. Let me change this. Let me go ahead and reduce the size. Let me increase the size. Let me align center. Oh, now I like it. Or you know what? It was in the print book, it was a small, but I think it's just best to make it a full page picture in the ebook. And that's super simple to do. And so I think that's a really important part for both. Now going into fiction, fiction, and you can still do some of these things in nonfiction, but it's not as prevalent. But I really, really love the look of a 2-page image full bleed chapter. Okay? And so what that is where, you know, maybe you've used your artist or you've created something yourself. You can create this full page. 2 pages image. The words of the first chapter will start on one side and are over the image itself. I've seen designs, and this is something that, you know, we can send over for people to be able to see. We have it also on the homepage. I've seen designs that are just jaw dropping. And I tell you, if I'm a
in a good way,
reader, oh yeah, okay, absolutely. Cool. Like, and if I'm a fiction reader, let's say I'm a sci-fi military fan, and I pick up somebody's book and I get it, and I start flipping through and I see these amazing images that are woven into the text, you know, the way that some of these authors are easily doing with Atticus, it is incredible. It's an immediate like boost in value in my mind. Mm. Like, this is clearly not some, you know, first time author, you know, that just kind of threw something together. This is really cool. And it's very easy to put together. And so cool. I've seen a lot of authors really enjoy using those 2-page full bleed image chat.
Got it. And so I guess kind of a follow up on that note, how long does it take someone to format a book themselves using the tool? And let's use a 60,000 word nonfiction book as an example. How long typically does it take someone to format a book of that length and that type? And then which one's which one takes longer and is harder to do? Is it fiction formatting or is it nonfiction?
Yeah, that really depends. So that last question, which one's harder or longer, really depends. But let me answer the first question first, and because I think it leads into the second. So when, let's say you just want to make something that looks good, professional, honestly, you could probably format it in less than 3 minutes. And the reason for that is we created theme. These themes have all these certain characteristics and everything already pre-applied in them. You just can select from our themes list and you can be like, I like that one. That looks good to go, and click. And then after that, it walks you through kind of a process to choose, hey, do you want it to do this? Do you want drop caps? You know, do you want to choose a design for your ornamental break? Like, and so, and then by the time, and then choose your trim size. After you've done that, you've pretty much, it's done everything. The software is already calculated out. Okay, this is the right ratio. This is where the word should appear. We don't want to have any widows and orphans. And that's where there's like that one sentence that really shouldn't be there. It needs to be dropped into the new page or vice versa. And it's done that. So then all you have to do is you can go ahead and just check and look at it and say, ah, yes, I love this. Or, ooh, you know what? I should make this change. And that's it. So you can go through user themes and in 3 minutes, you could be good to go and have a good looking professional formatted book. Okay. Whereas it could be longer is, let's say you want to build your own thing. You want to make something super unique to you, you know, that, and you want to do, you know, special images and things like that. Then that's, we'll start to add. It really depends on how far you want to go, how much design you want to put into it. But that could range anywhere between, you know, 30 minutes to, you know, 3 hours, depending on how hardcore or how fast you are in creating your designs and things like that. But it is incredibly faster than if you were to try to do that manually on something like Word or, you know, some of the other programs that are out there.
Mm-hmm. Got it. And so typically, I guess if you were, I'm assuming the complexity, because I hear our formatting team talk a lot about, hey, if it's a straightforward fiction book that has no images, no tables, etc., that formatting is super quick and clean. If it's a nonfiction book that has tables, images, graphs, all the things, like that is typically longer. So I guess, is it safe to say, unless it's comprehensive fiction with a lot of images, that it's typically a lot faster and easier to go fiction than it is nonfiction? Or is that not true?
I think that's fair to say. I've seen a lot of nonfiction books that don't use images or tables or things like that. I've seen a lot of nonfiction books that, you know, don't have footnotes, aren't doing special characters, aren't even using subheaders or things like that. And if that's the case, that's almost the equivalence of like a normal fiction book in terms of like its intensity of work. Whereas those that are doing those things, absolutely, you're, you know, and especially if you're you're not using a software like Atticus, that those things could be incredibly time intensive.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm going to kind of lightning round a few final questions here. Are there any genres or types of books that don't work well with the tool?
Yeah, I will say children's books. And it's a weird way. It's a weird answer, because truth be told is I don't think anybody's actually built a formatting software just for children's book, because there's certain things that children's authors would love to do. And when I'm talking children's books, I'm talking like 2, 3, 4, 5 year old level, not 7, 8, 9, where there's words. I think that there's room for improvement. But that being said, though, is out of the other software options out there, Atticus is probably the better option, because the key is I tell the children's authors, hey, what you need to do is you need to figure out your trim size first. Then you need to format the picture with the words inside the picture, and then bring over the image and then format it as a full bleed image each page. It's just more intensive. I think there's a faster or better way to do it, but I don't think anybody's created that.
Got it. Cool. That's good. That's helpful. What's the hardest part that authors have learning the tool and learning how to use Atticus? And any pro tips on for people who want to learn the tool faster?
Yeah. So I'm a huge proponent of education. I mean, that's Kindlepreneur, my YouTube channel, et cetera. I love videos. We actually have a person on staff. Her name is Monique. And it's funny as I'll go to like the conferences and like people run up to say, Monique, you know, she's just got her following just because she's constantly making videos. And it's showing people how to do this. You can look over her shoulder as she builds. Also too, she does YouTube lives where it's like, let's build some. And so she really does a lot of incredible work making sure that authors can see and improve their skill at formatting. Like we talked about, you could just jump right in there, you know, use one of our themes and build something. But over time, you might want to gain more skill, or you might want to gain more capability, or you want to do something crazy. We've got those videos right there to do that. One of the things I'll say that is usually a problem that somebody might run into is that we constantly recommend to authors to upload their Word document or, you know, their document into Atticus instead of copying and pasting. So if you didn't write inside of Atticus, it's just better to upload the doc. The reason for this is that when you copy and paste from, say, Word or Google Doc or whatever you're using, when you do that, 99% of the time, you're copying over code, okay, that's inside. You won't see it, but it's bringing over formatting code. And then what that does is it can mess with. So there's ways to clear out the code if you really want to do that. But we tell people, look, like 9 times out of 10, if somebody runs into a problem on trying to export, it's because they did a copy and paste and they brought over code that, you know, is telling the system, whoa, something weird's here. So that's my biggest thing to authors is, hey, recommend not copy and pasting, just upload. And by the way, you can upload chapter to chapter. So if you already uploaded what you thought was your book and then you wrote something else, you could just drag and drop that into your book as well. And it will just pop it right in there as well.
Cool. That's great. I guess last question that I have, obviously a lot of advancements in AI. And I think in the book world, a lot of authors are spooked about it. And it's like, man, is this the end of the world? Is this going to put me out of a job? Is this going to kill authors? But there's a lot of interesting components when it comes to how can you use it to up level the quality of the book. So I guess my question is, how do you see AI changing book formatting, if at all? And are there any AI features that you've already integrated or plan on integrating into Atticus?
Yeah, I love the use of like AI artwork inside of the book. I'm not a fan personally. And again, I'm going to speak on my personal beliefs on this. I'm not a fan of using that on the cover. I think there's a lot of like possible red flags that could be raised. There's who knows how the companies will react to it. That being said, though, is like I've used it to generate a map. I've used it to showcase certain images. And what we talked about earlier is formatting those full bleed images inside of your chapter, or maybe making that your chapter theme, is incredible. It allows me to do something that I couldn't do before. If I want to make my ornamental break be a sword, but a special sword that I had, super cool and easy to do. So I really love that aspect because it just makes the book that much cooler, that much more exciting. Same thing with nonfiction too. You know, you can generate images that highlight or help to, you know, lighten the mood, or you know, if you're describing a story or a situation, you can generate something that kind of showcase. With regards to AI, I like the idea of AI as being sort sort of like a muse or an assistant. And I think that there are some really interesting ways that legitimate great authors can improve their skill and their speed at writing by using something like that. But I do recommend that people be not so much cautious, but just to make sure that they understand what those systems are doing and how they feel about them. In terms of Atticus, we don't have any intentions of making any AI anything inside of it. I want it to kind of keep it clean and pure, and let it be the author's choice if they want to introduce AI into it. So we can integrate with a lot of the AI programs out there. It will work automatically. And if that's something that you find is important for you, just know that it will work and it won't affect anybody else's, just your book. And if you want to stay pure and clean, we absolutely acknowledge that and we will work to maintain that.
Cool. This has been really helpful, Dave. As always, where can people go to find out more about your stuff, about Atticus, to purchase Atticus? Like, where's the best place to send people?
Yeah, atticus.io. You can find it there. Also, if you have any questions, there's the support link right there. Our support team is amazing. They are authors themselves, so they truly understand what you're going through and where you're coming from when you ask questions. And they will go, you know, the whole nine yards to really help you, whether or not you're thinking about buying it or that you've already bought it, even if you bought it years ago. And just to be clear, it is a one-time cost of $147. It is not a subscription base. So when you buy it, you get it for life and you get access to, you know, our support team as well.
Bad boys for life. Atticus.io. Check it out. Dave, you're amazing, man. Love you. Appreciate you. Thank you for this episode.
Absolutely. And again, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for watching or listening to this episode of the Self-Publishing School Podcast. I know there's so many places that you could be spending your time. There's other podcasts that you could be listening to, YouTube channels that you could be watching. So thank you so much. It means the world. Now, I want you to do three things right now if you found this episode helpful. I don't know if you know this, but we've got a YouTube channel. It's a companion channel to this podcast. All the video versions of the episode are on the YouTube channel. So number one, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Number two, if you're listening to this podcast, wherever, whether this is Spotify, Apple Podcasts, number two, I want you to subscribe to this podcast right now so you don't miss a future episode. And then number three, this is probably the most important, leave a review on the podcast. All right, reviews are super important and help this podcast get discovered by other people. So number three, leave a review on the podcast. Thank you so much. I'll see you in the next episode. Thank you so much for watching or listening to this episode of the Self-Publishing School Podcast. I know there's so many places that you could be spending your time. There's other podcasts that you could be listening to, YouTube channels that you could be watching. So thank you so much. It means the world. Now, I want you to do three things right now if you found this episode helpful. All right, number one, I don't know if you know this, but we've got a YouTube channel. It's a companion channel to this podcast. All the video versions of the episode are on the YouTube channel. So number one, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Number two, if you're listening to this podcast, wherever, whether this is Spotify, Apple Podcasts, number two, I want you to subscribe to this podcast right now so you don't miss a future episode. And then number three, this is probably the most important, leave a review on the podcast. All right. Reviews are super important and help this podcast get discovered by other people. So number three, leave a review on the podcast. Thank you so much. I'll see you in the next episode. If you're on the fence about scheduling a publishing consultation call with my team, maybe you're not quite ready for that, I've got some free training that I think will be really helpful for you. All right, all you have to do is go to register to sign up. Go to selfpublishing.com/free training. When you do, you're also going to get a free digital copy of my new book, Published. And on that training, you're going to learn the next step, so how to implement with your book. So how to write, how to publish, how to launch successfully. So go to register right now at selfpublishing.com/free training. I'll see you there.